From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okie dokie. It is hour number two. Well, we haven't got to any of my tabs. I got all kinds of stuff I want to talk about, but I think we've had an interesting discussion this first hour. We still have Jimmy Rogers to come up. Also, Robert Kiyosaki, we're going to play some tape with him. This little side note I think is curious. I think it's worth mentioning. Oliver Stone is doing a four-part series on Vladimir Putin on Showtime, and they had a thing on Showtime, Andrew, where you could go in and do
Ask the premier.
No, yeah, whatever. In other words, a test. What do they call it? Free trial. Not a free trial. Yeah, free trial for $9. And I did that. And I'm watching it on my computer because I don't have a TV. And I watched the first two episodes with Oliver Stone and Putin. And they got two more tonight and tomorrow night. You know, this Mr. Putin guy is, I got to say, he's really... He's a solid dude. I know he's a politician, but
you remember when Obama was president? I said we would trade him for Putin, and we would throw Joe Biden into the deal.
His whole history with his father and the KGB.
Oh, yeah.
But he gets it. When Oliver Stone asks him all these questions,
he knows where Ollie's going.
He understands this country better than most Americans do.
Amen.
He says, you know, we don't really care who the president is. We know...
where the power is.
We know where the power is. We know what these people are going to do. He said the only reason they have NATO, we have to be the bad guys. Otherwise, NATO would have no relevance. I mean, it's true.
No reason to exist. Yeah, Goldstein.
Why would you even
he's
have
the boogeyman.
NATO? Why would you even have NATO?
Right. Wouldn't need them.
Wouldn't need them. But so you got to make Russia the bad guy.
You got to have a bad guy.
Or you got to have a bad guy. Yeah, and NATO doesn't mess with terrorism.
In George Orwell's book, it was Goldstein was the guy's name. Right? You know, find Goldstein, what we're going to do to him.
Oh,
man,
is that
you don't
right?
want to be him.
I'm going to have to reread that. I haven't read it for a long time. So Goldstein was Russia.
Yeah, he was the bad guy in there. Yeah. Constantly choking down on civil rights and every other type of right and freedom and everything in their pursuit of Goldstein.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in this case, we want to crush Donald Trump underfoot because he talked to the Russians. He colluded with the Russians. I'd like to find out if President Obama might have had some interaction with the Iranians or the Cubans or some of the other persona non grata to the State Department. And, you know, was he colluding with them? I don't know. Let's go
check.
Well,
without the media, this whole Russian thing would be gone long ago.
Sure.
And it's just not. And they had
conspired with the Russians. Now, did he collude with the Russians? Nah. Did he tell them, hey, hack into Podesta's email? I did catch a story yesterday that there was a Russian hacker that was arrested by the FBI and Interpol.
Oh, yeah.
And was offered citizenship and cash and everything else if he would just say he was a state-sponsored hacker who was responsible for the leaking of Podesta's email.
Yeah.
FBI? In Russia? With Interpol? What?
Mr. Putin says, he said absurd that if we did try to hack somebody,
we'd leave our IP address.
Do you think we would leave our IP address on it
we don't know.
Like the CIA claims.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not even...
Oh, this came clearly from a Russian IP address. Oh, you can't spoof those IP addresses. Everybody knows
that. Putin check this out. Mr. Putin met with Ethereum founder to create a national virtual currency with the ruble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where he's going.
Take the blockchain, tie it to the ruble. That's what I'm saying. Take the blockchain, tie it to the dollar. It can still be a private ledger inside the Federal Reserve. They are going to absolutely choke Bitcoin's concept. Think of it the way Raul put it. Cloud computing, everyone who's doing cloud computing is making money. But the infrastructure itself is worthless. It has no value because everyone's doing it. So the same... I mean, I don't want to pick on Bitcoin because there are other finite currencies that will, but the next best thing comes along. And here, by the way, is the real test of value with Bitcoin. When people are buying it just because it's going up, What do you think they'll do when it's going down?
Oh, my goodness. I'm out of here, George.
I'm out. See ya. You know, I had no reason to own the Bitcoin except that it was going up, and now I'm selling. And that's the kind of mania that feeds upon itself on the down and upside.
Down and up.
Once
yeah.
it starts going down, it just keeps going as people keep bailing out. President, and there's no end user, excuse me, no central user that would stand and buy to maintain price value and restore confidence. It just will go its own way, and nothing we can do will
stop. If you would like to be on the show, question or comment about your own particular situation with Andrew, he's not a financial advisor, but he can give you his
play one on
his,
TV.
His little theory. He doesn't. Yeah. Is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com.
Now, Kenneth Rogoff's got a new book out.
Who's Kenneth Rogoff?
Remember Rogoff? So I wrote Uncle Sam Cooks the Books in 2003.
Right.
And I said in Uncle Sam Cooks the Books that no way the national debt is what they tell us it is. I think it's more like 40 or
I forget the number.
Mm-hmm. Trillion dollars. Mm-hmm. Well, oh, man, everybody and their Aunt Susie jumped on me and just, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. It reminded me of Delos Smith in the old visuals that are of me and him where he says, oh, baloney, the Federal Reserve doesn't create money.
Oh, baloney.
Yeah, baloney. Like, you know, we were back in that phase where, so anyway, Kenneth Rogoff, professor at Harvard, like one of the most influential people in the economic
Harvard man.
He comes out in the fall of 2003 with a report that says, yeah, Andy doesn't know what he's talking about. It's really $70 trillion. So the heat came off me and went immediately on him. Well, Kenneth Rogoff, very prominent Harvard economist, has a new book out called The Curse of Cash.
Ooh.
He says we don't need paper bills at all. He wants to phase out hundreds, 50s, and 20s, just the way India did. He said they account for 97% of the face value of all money in circulation. So he thinks paper money is problematic because it creates monetary policy restrictions. It prevents the Federal Reserve from pushing interest rates into the negative range or knowing that here comes a flow of cash that we don't know anything about. So
what do you think about that?
What do I think? I think I've said it here. I guarantee you we will eliminate the 150 from circulation. Guaranteed. In our lifetime, we'll see no more hundreds, no more 50s. You know, there's specimen currency. I have specimen currency, $500, $1,000 bill.
Really?
$5,000 bill. These all exist or existed at one time. A $10,000 bill existed at one time. A $100,000 bill with Woodrow Wilson's picture
really?
On it existed at one time.
$100,000.
So, yeah, $100,000.
Now, if you still had that, that's good, right?
Legal tender.
Oh, it's legal tender.
Lawful money.
Yeah, but see, that's nothing, Andrew, because I've got $100 trillion Zimbabwe note. I mean, I got one of those.
I was passing those out back in the day.
I got one of those.
Yeah.
So that's nothing, man.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Boy, those guys. I saw an article. It's just, it's. What are they gonna do?
They just keep doing what they're doing.
Oh, I mean, they can't. I mean, they got nothing going on. But see, they got all this gold and silver. Mm-hmm. And rare earth minerals and all this stuff in the ground, which is why
the company's being driven into the ground.
That's why the boys are over there with their tongues hanging out. You know,
sure.
You know, what can we do? What do you need?
Well, we start with corrupting the institution.
Right.
So the first move on Zimbabwe was to corrupt the institution. You had, you know, a generation of farmers there that were doing a great job back in the day. And when the idea was, oh, we're just going to hand the country over to the masses.
Yeah.
And they did. And the masses promptly went in and inflated the currency and bought all the property from all the previous owners and settlers, effectively rendering them paupers, and a great many just left Zimbabwe. So when those folks were in control and when the government was relatively stable for the boys to come in and steal gold concessions or steal rare earth mineral concessions was practically non-existent. You know, well, go away. We're not going to give you this. But in a heightened state of disaster, as Zimbabwe finds itself in, they're willing to make deals with anyone at any time. Copy that, Venezuela.
Same thing.
Copy that. So, you come in, you corrupt the institution that is government, and then you buy into all of the favors that they're eager to dole out. And that's exactly what the Chinese are doing, and the U.S. to a greater extent.
Is that anything like interfering in an election? I mean, I'm just saying. I don't know. It sounds like you're interfering in some election. But yeah, I don't know. We wouldn't do that. The United States wouldn't do that.
If you look at the Venezuelan election, which was the re-election of, we've forgotten his name now.
Chavez? No.
Yes.
Chavez?
Hugo Chavez.
Hugo Chavez.
The re-election. The boys in the U.S., the oil companies and the CIA, let's face it, although they try to take their hands off and say, oh, no, that was all private United States parties, they went in with gangbusters, paying staff, importing strategists to try to tip the election away from Hugo into the hands of the
traditional.
They didn't
interfere with the election. That's directly, against the law.
Directly.
Was that on TV in Venezuela?
No, I don't think it was. Oh, it may have been.
Was that on TV at CNN?
The point is that we mobilize private forces. Real good movie on the subject called Charlie Wilson's War.
Yeah.
If you want to watch that, you can see how they take these non-government organizations and they fund them and then allow them to do what is illegal for the government to do. So, you know, it's the way J.P. Morgan put it. I don't need lawyers to tell me what I can't do. I need lawyers to tell me how to do what I can't do. Mm. And that's the way that they do it. So they do it in a legal fashion. Sure, the government funnels money to an NGO, and the NGO funds the interference in the election, and the government can say, oh, no, that's not us. That's them. And that's what we've done and have done and will continue to do.
In 2008, the Zim dollar crashed to hyperinflation. At one time, the largest denomination was $100 trillion. I got one of those. And even that soon became worthless in terms of purchasing power. And then they did this bond note thing last year. So they put out a $1 Zim bond note.
Right.
And they said it's worth $1.
Yeah, tied it to
the dollar. Well, that didn't turn
fizzled
out.
Fizzled out, too.
That didn't turn out well.
The tie didn't hold.
Yeah. So now it's just a black market. It's just a mess, God.
That's right.
These people down there. Is it possible to ever get a really honest government? I mean, no. How can you? You can't get one here. How could you get one there? It's sad what's going on.
Yeah, but you know, if you're reading on this subject of inflating fractional currencies.
Yeah.
When I first started, we would talk about most folks talked about the Weimar Republic in 1922, a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread. But 20 years before I started studying money, there was a hyperinflation in Hungary, which outpaced the Weimar Republic. And I could always tell which of my colleagues were the classical economists because they were talking still about what they learned in school 20 years before, which was about the Weimar Republic inflation. Mm-hmm. And similarly, you can tell economists that were trained in my generation who talk about the Hungarian inflation of 54. But you want to know an economist who's paying attention to what's going on now, they talk about the Zimbabwe inflation, and I think they will for the next half a century. You know, this was the worst inflation, hyperinflation on record in the history of man. The Zimbabwe inflation is now legendary in terms of proportion.
Well, it's going on all over in Spain. Libra Bank, you know that one?
Oh, sure.
You don't want to invest in that.
No.
They're having a hard time with Libra
Bank.
There's
a bunch that you don't want to invest
in. They stopped people from selling the bank stock short.
That's
it was
right.
Just going down and so fast.
Yeah.
So these banks, Andrew, just have too much debt, too many derivatives, too much stuff that they don't
have
to
do. Well, they have a balance sheet that is insolvent. You know, a liquidity crisis. We talked about happens when you have a bunch of assets that are not liquid enough to cover your liabilities. And in this case, the bank typically takes these assets to a central bank and turns them back into money without having to sell them into the open marketplace.
Yeah.
So that's a liquidity crisis. A solvency crisis is when they don't have bonds or anything. They don't have assets that they can trade for more money to make their balance sheet liquid. So the difference between this one, what's unfolding now, and the previous one is we've already, and here I talk about the ECB and the Federal Reserve, we've already monetized all of the liquid assets that there are. The only thing left is, quite honestly, fictitious value. And they're going to have to come up with a way to make the banks whole even on their fictitious value, or they risk they run the risk of a contagion, just like we had in
2008
and 97.
Yeah. Okay, so Mr. Trump, President Trump has released his overall thing on the new banking regs. Have you got into that yet? And what's up with what they're going to do? I've got an article.
Just essentially the rolling back of Dodd-Frank, right? So Dodd-Frank is out the window. And Dodd-Frank was put in place. Of course, we repealed Glass-Steagall, President Clinton,
98.
On his way out of office with the advice of Robert Rubin and Alan Greenspan and Larry Summers, you know, the three most prominent economists. He signed the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which prohibited investment banks and commercial banks from merging. So if you were a commercial bank, that's all you were. You couldn't do anything else. You couldn't be anything else. You could only be a commercial bank. And once Glass-Steagall was repealed, then your bank could be an insurance company, a car detailing operation, a funeral home, whatever business they wanted to get into. They could do that with the depositor's money. And that's where the real problems occurred, as they looted the entire system through these mortgage-backed securities and other collateralized debt obligations. Making up that money was what we did when we provided liquidity to the banking system by saying, okay, give us all of these worthless assets and we'll give you new, fresh money. And that worked that time. It worked. We came out of it, if you will. Here it is, 2017, nearly 10 years later, and you know everyone's feeling confident again. However, as the cracks are appearing now in the banking system this time, we're going to go back to pre-Dodd-Frank, but post-Glass-Steagall. So it's because of the crisis that occurred, Congress passed regulations and said, wait a minute, you've heard the Volcker Rule is one,
sure,
where banks can't trade for their own proprietary account, even though they are this quasi thing, this, you know, commercial bank, investment bank, insurance company. They can't invest in securities for their own account, the so-called Volcker Rule. And many other...
So they're going to get rid of that.
Yeah, and many other rules within... they're probably going to get rid of the Consumer Financial Protection Board. They're probably going to get rid of the rules and regulations on mortgages that
Right.
made it so cumbersome Yeah. and hard to get a mortgage. So they're essentially, so we had the crisis. Congress acted quickly. Here's Dodd-Frank. Here's legislation that will prevent that from happening again.
And they're going to, that's
And
gonna...
that legislation was so strict that it gave us anemia in our economy for, I don't know, a decade, right? And now they're saying, oh, well, maybe we were too strict, and we're going to remove some of those regulations. Now, what's going to happen is, of course, it's going to be boomy for a minute. I just fear that the banks being allowed to make all this extra money by removing regulation will lead them to the sorts of excesses that will exceed the excesses that we saw in 2007.
Well, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin obviously is in on this when the whole thing— And he's a banker. I mean, he's a Goldman My Slacks guy. So he's doing stuff to just kick the can down the road, right? He's going to do everything he can to talk the president into doing stuff so this liquidity in the central banks and the banks can just do more what they do so the thing doesn't crash and burn.
Yeah.
Pretty much, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
That makes sense to me. Mr. President, this is what we need to do. Andrew Goss and Patrick Timpone, it is June 14th. Now, Andrew has been, I don't know if it's been the same as 2008, but I can remember when we started this show in the spring of 2008, Andrew began talking about a fall tsunami. And he was pretty right on, because I would suspect the day that Lehman Brothers went belly up and the whole thing, that was kind of a tsunami, wasn't it? That was pretty good prediction. Yeah. Now, you're talking similar, and we're going to get your ideas. But let's hear... a little interview that Mr. Jim Rogers had on this subject, who's a pretty smart cookie, I would suspect.
Smarter than me.
Yeah, he lives in Singapore, And he's taught his children Mandarin. That might be a clue of what he's saying. Anyway, his kids know Mandarin.
What is going to be with respect to the stock market? What's going to happen?
I learned very early in my investing careers, I better not invest in what I want. I better invest in what's happening in the world. Otherwise, I'll be broke, dead broke. Well, what's going to happen? Is this going to continue? Some stocks in America are turning into a bubble. The bubble's going to come. Then it's going to collapse. You should be very worried.
So when is this going to happen?
Later this year or next.
Later this year or next. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Write it down.
And what will trigger it?
Well, it's interesting because these things always start where we're not looking. In 2007, Iceland went broke. And people said, Iceland? Is that a country? They have a market? And then Ireland went broke. And then Bear Stearns went broke. And then, you know, Lehman Brothers went broke. They spiral like that. Always happens where we're not looking. I don't know, it could be an American pension plan that goes broke, and many of them are broke, as you know. It could be some country we're not watching. It could be all sorts of things.
And how big a crash could we be looking at?
It's going to be the worst in your lifetime.
Whoa. I've had some pretty big ones in my lifetime. It's long.
It's going to be the biggest in my lifetime, and I'm older than you. No, it's going to be serious stuff. It's going to be big. We've had financial problems in America. Let's use America. Every 4 to 7 years since the beginning of the Republic. Well, it's been over 8 since the last one. This is the longest or the second longest in recorded history, so it's coming. And the next time it comes, you know, in 2008 we had a problem because of debt. The debt now, that debt was nothing compared to what's happening now. In 2008, the Chinese had a lot of money saved for a rainy day. It started raining, they started spending the money. Now even the Chinese have debt, and the debt is so much higher. The Federal Reserve, the central bank in America, the balance sheet is up over 5 times since 2008. It's gonna be the worst in my lifetime too. Be worried.
Yeah.
What do you think, Andrew Goss?
Well, I think there are 3 big banks, Deutsche Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, Union Bank of Switzerland, that were just, I mean, in the last few days, given an extension on their requirement under the Dodd-Frank rules to divest these illiquid funds, these legacy funds that they have. So they have to get rid of all these bad assets that they're currently carrying on their books.
So give us an idea what they are. Like, are they mortgage-backed securities that they pay too much for?
Yeah, collateralized debt obligations.
CDOs and stuff. That nobody will give you the money for.
They're completely worthless. They're illiquid.
They can't sell them to anyone. So they're on the balance sheet.
And they're on the bank's balance sheet.
Of UBS, Deutsche Bank.
And Silicon Valley Bank.
Out there in Silicon Valley?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
And they have others, exposure to the tech industry being one.
Okay.
In the case of SVB, UBS also has the same exposure. And Deutsche Bank, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
It's been a problem for years. It's been a bigger. So they've given these guys now more time to comply.
To do what?
Well, to try to get rid of this garbage can that they have on their balance sheets.
Mm.
They're illiquid already.
Uh-huh.
And if, in fact, they roll back these regulations, the regulations that they're running afoul of.
That we just talked about.
Right.
Right.
Then now suddenly there's no requirement for them to divest themselves of these illiquid funds. So
Mr. Mnuchin is in a sense, protecting these guys. Or he's protecting the possibility
that they would have to.
Of doing a 2008 redux.
I mean, they've already given him an extension.
Yeah.
Right? So,
how long of an extension?
3 years.
Oh, it's wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, what do you agree with Mr. Rogers when something dumb's going to happen end of this year or next?
Yeah.
Are you in that time frame?
Oh, yeah. I'm in the fall time frame for sure.
This fall?
This fall, because we have, you know, lots of things happen in October. Ends of fiscal years and checkups and accounting.
Debt ceiling and all kinds. The,
you know, what's his name? Henry Paulson put it, you know, you don't know who's not wearing a bathing suit until the tide goes out.
Right.
And that's October. It's kind of like the tide goes out every year. Fiscal years end, reports get made, filings are made.
Which is when Lehman
deadlines
happens, right?
Yeah. Yes. That's,
Well, so do you agree with Mr. Rogers that
This one's going to be much worse.
Yeah,
than
this
America.
One's going to be much worse.
Yeah, you remember I said worldwide dollar-denominated debt
huge.
Has doubled since 2007.
That's nuts.
You can't say the world's economy has doubled.
No, so no.
We've doubled the debt, however, dollar-denominated to $97 trillion.
What?
The TR number.
$97 trillion?
Yeah. It's an enormous, there's an enormous amount of debt floating in the world, and our ability to repay it is questionable at best. And with schemes like Mr. Zuckerberg's, such as creating money and just handing it out to the masses, and proposed changes to the rules that prevent the banks from making these risky bets, which is what they're very prone to do. If you recall, Bear Stearns had doubled down. They had made that bad MBS investment,
right,
and then doubled down because that's what you're supposed to do. Well,
black,
you bet 20 and lost,
black
bet 40. Yeah.
Jeez.
So as the banks are now freed up from the restrictions that were placed on them in the wake of the crisis, well, then now you remove their restrictions. Look out. They're going to be doubling down to try to make up their losses.
So, Andrew Goss, on this June 14th morning, if you and Jim Rogers are correct and there's going to be some really silly things either fall or next year, our listeners around the world, give them some ideas right now of some things that, regardless, they're working for somebody, working for themselves. How is it going to affect them?
All right. So if you're a person who's working day to day,
right,
hand to mouth, so to speak,
yeah,
and you're one paycheck away from collapse or catastrophe, well, you're not alone. You know, many millions of Americans are around the world are in that very same predicament. But what you're going to see generally is wage price disparity, pressure on wages driving price up, the price of labor, and then higher cost of labor driving the cost of goods up. So if you're living week to week, hand to mouth, you'll see higher wages to help you offset higher expenses, something that hasn't been the case for a decade or more. Two, I would argue, almost 20 years, anemic wage growth, where the typical wage earner's paycheck does not keep up with the rate of inflation. I think you'll see for a short term wage pressure, wages rising, and that will help that entire class of people deal with the crisis. And if Zuckerberg's proposal comes through, more social programs that will make up the difference between what they need and what they earn. So if you're a person at the bottom of that spectrum, you probably will benefit from this cycle. If you're a person in the middle or upper middle, where you have investments, you have stocks, you have bonds, you have money in the bank, you have assets, be prepared for erosion in the stocks and particularly in the bonds. Now, it's a little early yet, but within an hour or two, we'll know that the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates another quarter point, the second such increase. This will immediately affect your bond holdings. So your money market funds, your mutual funds, your bond funds, all will suffer at the balance sheet and at your bottom line. So if your investment has anything to do with someone else's debt, sell it now. Do not wait.
Someone else's debt.
Yeah. If someone else owes you money through some debt instrument, CD, T-bill, corporate bond, municipal bond, pick your bond, money market fund, mutual fund, any type of a debt instrument, exchange traded funds that deal in debt. You know, there's a million different ways you could be involved in debt, someone else's debt, and not even know it. So that requires that you read the prospectus of, you know, the various funds that you buy into, which is the most popular way to invest today with exchange traded funds. You may find that these funds, you have an exchange-traded fund that buys distressed property, and you may look at the balance sheet and realize that 25% of its assets are in corporate paper or, you know, high-yielding junk bonds so that they can keep their earnings rate up while they're figuring out which distressed property to buy. So make sure that you're not invested in someone else's debt. Because as we move forward, I believe the ability of companies, individuals, municipalities, and states to pay their debts will be called into question, and maybe a rash of defaults will follow behind that, but ultimately it will erode the value of any debt instrument.
Okay, and then we'll pick up, talk a little bit about pension funds as well. When we come back, we're just going to do a little short break. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. Join us if you care to. We'll stick around to get all the emails and cover some more territory for you this morning. It's good to be here. It is June 14th, 2017. We got some cool stuff coming up tomorrow, including Dr. Harvey Beagleson. Yeah, he's fun. He does some blood work that'll just knock your socks off. Previously with Peter Ragnar, who's a great example of staying young and healthy, we asked him what kinds of things he takes.
Personally, for myself, I look at all of the supplements that help bolster and harmonize my hormones. And, you know, this is both for men and for women. And when you go online, there's so much information about that out there. I heard on one of your advertisements there, Patrick, about the pine pollen. I personally take pine pollen, which I think it's an amazing product, has an amazing effect upon the body.
Peter, it's one of our favorites too. Pine pollen, any of these are Thrival links. You have the pine pollen pure potency, pine pollen gold, and if you'd like to get it every month, the auto ship is the best price. Also, Stephen Buhner's book, exclusively on pine pollen, is right there on the site too, Daniel's site, right here on OneRadioNetwork.com.
We hope you're enjoying the program on OneRadioNetwork.com with Andy Goss and Patrick Timpone. For those of you interested in acquiring gold and silver coins, SDL Incorporated at 1-800-878-2646 is providing information for investors who would love to learn about how to properly acquire United States gold and silver coins. Call us today for free information, 1-800-878-2646, and learn how to incorporate gold and silver coins into your personal portfolio. USGoldCoins.com, 1-800-878-2646.
Previously with Stephen Huer, and why the uniqueness of One World Whey delivers exceptional benefits.
A non-denatured, truly pure, truly raw whey protein will only help to raise glutathione. And when you raise glutathione, you have to remember, every cell of the body, your pancreas, your liver, brain, all are dependent upon 10% of the protein content and every cell being glutathione, and makes that cell detoxify itself of heavy metals, chemicals, and whatever drugs. And then that makes the cell healthy. And one of the reasons that you have chronic disease is because the cells of the different organs and bodies are producing too little glutathione. They're succumbing to the free radicals. They're succumbing to the toxins, damaging the function of that organ. And that's one of the reasons why One World Whey is so profoundly therapeutically powerful, because every cell and every organ depends upon high levels of glutathione. And this is the number one food to fuel it over long periods of time, is glutathione production.
One World Whey offers four very, very good tasting flavors: chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and unsweetened, unflavored. Click and order One World Whey right now on OneRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Jennifer Daniels, who's here on the last week of the month, she'll be here in a couple weeks. It's amazing. Her one of the biggest things that she talks about day in and day out is how important being hydrated is. And it's just so simple, and so it's so amazing the problems that people have with blood pressure, with their gut, with everything, just by not being hydrated. Now the challenge is with water. Water has been manipulated a lot for a long time, city water. And I saw today where the EPA is fighting to keep water fluoridated around the country. There's a lot of different cities and counties that want to get the fluoride out of the water, and EPA is really fighting to keep it in. So you know that they're from the government and they're here to help, right? God love them. So where I'm going with this is there's a cool little machine that you can get from Ken Rolla that structures the water, so you want to clean it up, right? But even if you wanted to drink this Fiji water, which now PhD yesterday Dr. Exley out of England, who's in it. He is an expert on aluminum. He's been studying aluminum for 30 years, just aluminum. I mean, this is what he does. This guy, he's got more letters behind his name than allowed by law. He said that, and he didn't, you know, he doesn't own any stock, but the Fiji water, and other people have brought this up, it's pretty interesting. Fiji water has silicon, soluble silicon, that you can't get out of a pill, that actually detoxifies aluminum out of the brain. And they've got research that shows that it does this, and he says the aluminum is the number one thing for Alzheimer's. So go figure. I bought four bottles yesterday. He said you could drink this Fiji water every day, you know, half liter to a liter, and probably never have any aluminum in your brain. So what you could do if you wanted to just use this as your water source, I mean, I bought a big liter, I think it was a couple bucks at Whole Foods. So, you know, if you did a liter today of it, that'd be, you know, $60 a month, you know, for your health. I mean, what's that, right? That's like, you know, two cups of coffee at Starbucks. Anyway, you could get the Fiji water. If you wanted to do this, it's just an idea. You could get the Water Vitalizer Plus from Ken Rolla. Click on the Golden Pyramid on the front page and structure that puppy, and even put in some more minerals with this process. It's got a little mineral cube in there, because it's not structured up in a plastic bottle, but you could structure it and drink that, and you'd probably be doing really good for a long time until you figured out wanted to do something else with your water. You could probably do it, who knows, for the rest of your life. Now, it's clunky carrying water bottles home from the store, but, you know, it's just an idea that you can. And then if you do reverse osmosis your water, or if you distill your water, you definitely want to structure it up. It makes it a hexagonal thing, and it changes the whole structure of the water. I've seen microscopes like the Miyamoto thing. It's amazing the difference in the water molecule when you structure it. It's really something. It's just amazing. And you know what structured water is water that if you go up to Rocky Mountain High, looking for some wacky tobacco, and you see these streams coming down from the mountains, the water gets structured when it knocks up against boulders and rocks and stuff like that. And that's kind of God's way of saying, drink this water, dude, because you're gonna soak it into your cells. So it's really easy, much easier to hydrate with structured water. There's a Vitalizer Plus with the Golden Pyramid. Click on it right on the front page. Use the promo code ONERADIO. I think it's like $300 or something, but it's a good investment. And it's going to last you a long, long time. These things are really built well. And what's $300 if you're going to keep your body hydrated for 10 years or something? You know what I mean? Yeah.
Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network. Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up. I was confused there for a moment where we were. You know, it's just okay. Let's get to some emails here. Here's an email. There's an Austin credit union. They're going to begin to charge a yearly fee for an IRA or Roth IRA, $30 per year, $60 for a Roth, starting at the end of this month. The letter said it was due to the ever-increasing number of members. And at the same time, the demands for managing and accounting for IRA plans grow as well. So what are these demands, if Andrew knows, and accounting that would account for the new fee? It used to be that a financial institution liked to grow its business, and yet now they're complaining about more members. What's really going on here?
It's just like free checking. You know,
okay, those days are gone, right?
Yeah, it's not really free. Somebody pays for it. And in this case, the bank realizes that they're losing money for every IRA that they offer. And so they're going to start charging a fee. It doesn't surprise me.
It's just part of the deal.
Part of the deal, and it's probably going to get worse.
Uh-huh. Would you please ask Andrew, writes Lucretia, if the Chinese are starting to sell their bonds, will that cause a real estate downturn like in 2008 or more inflation to the housing market? Seems like the the selling of bonds will cause inflation that people would not be able to afford buying a home. Will this downturn cause the housing prices to increase? So you've confirmed this, that for years people were saying that the Chinese are selling their treasuries. In the last few weeks or months, you said, yes, in fact, they are more than they did before. They still have like 1.2, don't they? 1.1?
Well, like Jimmy Rogers said, right? You know, for years they saved money for a rainy day, and it's raining. Now, you know, they're illiquid in such a way that, it's hard to believe. It really is hard to believe how illiquid China is. If you research the numbers, you'll find that 20% of what their central bank calls assets, have no value at all.
Oh, good.
20%.
Oh, good.
So not only is it like the world's largest debtor, a creditor, it's one of the world's largest debtors as well.
And 1.1 billion or 2 billion, I don't know, 6 billion people, something like that.
Yeah. So, and it uses money as a political tool to, you know, generate employment, maintain stability. And they use loans and investments to advance its strategic interests. You mentioned Zimbabwe. You know, they go into a country like that and say, oh, here's a bunch of money to help you out. So back in 2007, they started this China Investment Corp, CIC.
Oh, yeah.
And that was taking the excess money, like nearly $1 trillion, and investing it around the world. And traditionally, they bought these treasury bills, bonds, and notes. And that's what we report on our link on, I think it's andygoss.com, that has large foreign holders of U.S. debt. And I noticed a month and a half, 2 months ago, that the Chinese had started being net sellers of U.S. debt. And I'll keep an eye on it for a while and see if they switch back to being net buyers. But for now, they are net sellers because these 800 and some odd billion dollars in reserves are spread among stocks and corporate bonds and hedge funds and private deals, commodities, and commercial real estate. These are all state-owned enterprises. And, you know, they might give a better rate of return than the Treasury, so that's why they did it. However, you can't sell them. There's no one to buy them. It's unlike the U.S. Treasury bond in that they are able to just sell and be done. Now, over the years, we've talked about initiatives by China, such as the BRICS Bank and the Asian Infrastructure Bank, and their general plan is to rebuild the Silk Road. Back to the days when trade with China was the big deal, and there was a road essentially that the traders used to move goods. And of course, with war and war and more war, this route kind of diminished in importance, and especially with shipping on the high seas. But now China wants to bring it back, man. They want to build railroads and highways and ports and infrastructure, airports and power. From, you know, Guangzhou to Rotterdam, they want an essential highway that runs from China into the center of Europe, and they're going to spend whatever money they have to. They view this as their savior, their, you know, one roll of the dice that will really bring them back to where they were. The problem there is that the money that they're handing out, the debt that they're incurring in order to make this happen is questionable at best.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to wind up blowing $300 to $500 billion and have absolutely no assets to show for it, which puts China at the forefront of indebted countries that really have significant debt overhang to contend with and illiquid in inability to actually, and they could sell the treasury bonds, but some of the crap they've invested in, they certainly can't sell. Mm-hmm.
George in San Bernardino, he says Steve Mnuchin's out there selling the idea of
50-year bond.
That too, but allowing banks to get more money back to their shareholders, they're lowering their capital requirements.
Right.
And what else did they
do? Well, that's part of the rolling back of
the whole thing.
Annual
all kinds of things. He said, isn't this just weakening the banks so to possibly do another 2008 thing?
Yeah, maybe.
In a way.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm. What was the link you played with Andrew Goss last week with all the excellent points John McAfee made about Trump and the Russia. It was excellent. I would love to share that one. Yeah, man, I don't know, Ray.
That was a John McAfee
John
interview.
McAfee thing. I think yeah. It was a McAfee interview. It may have been with RT, because they the only place.
I think it was Russia Times. Yeah, yeah.
The only person that would put him on would be Russia Times.
Right.
What did you think of? Did you watch any of the Jeff Sessions things yesterday?
Is there anything? Joke. Yeah, no.
Was there anything there?
No.
Nothing there.
Do I believe that Jeff Sessions talked to the Russians? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think Paul Manafort worked for the Russians to try to influence the Ukrainian elections? Yes, just another example of, you know, how we've had political operatives all over the country, all over the world, being paid to ply their electoral magic. It's what they do. So yeah. Would any one of them have gotten caught up in it? Yeah, any one of them could have most certainly gotten caught up. I think you'll find out Steve Mnuchin's probably talked to the Russians too. So not sure where they're going with this, but I did watch a piece of Jeff Sessions and then turned it off.
Yeah.
I was more interested in the Comey hearing.
Yeah.
Lordy, was, I hope there's a tape.
I didn't even ask you about that. Yeah.
Lordy, I hope there's a tape.
It turned out pretty good for the president, didn't it, the whole thing?
Sure, because he was a lying scumbag. The Comey guy was
really?
A coward.
Don't hold back there, man. Just say what you think.
I was going to, but I figured I better moderate it.
Really, you think
I don't believe
him? You think
him
he's a bad dude?
I do. I don't believe him for a minute. He had two conversations with President Obama in 8 years. Please, don't pee on my. What do they say in Texas? Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I don't believe him for a minute, not for a half a minute. Come on. No collusion at all in the Obama administration. But boy, I'm just scared of this president. He scares me. Okay. I didn't believe Comey for a minute, and honestly, I don't know that I believe Jeff Sessions either. He's trying to evade now, and I don't know. Who knows how bad it's going to end up being, but I agree with you. This Russia thing is a non-deal. I'm not not offended by it at all.
It was funny. You know, Oliver Stone is way lefty, but the cool thing about Stone is he really understands how rigged the government is.
And sure, it doesn't matter left or right. It's all about the money.
Yeah, it's all about the money. He gets that, which was pretty cool. So he said he'd been having a good conversation with Vladimir Putin. Part three is on tonight. And it was interesting when the Russian meddling thing came up, I think they're going to talk more about it tonight, Putin just really laughed because he said, did your media talk about Ukraine? You know, and there's a tape. There's a tape of the Assistant Secretary of State. You can go on YouTube and hear it. That this was a tape phone call. They were talking about who they were going to put in Ukraine.
They
were talking about it. You can go on YouTube. Yeah. Was there a hearing about that? Holy camoly. I mean, what are these? It's the hypocrisy in Washington.
Theater, yes.
Is just, yeah. I mean, you can go on YouTube and check it out. Just Google it. I don't know what her name was, but they're talked about. What was it, Yushchenko or the other dude? And they just put him in.
Who's getting the funding and how we're going to
do it? How we're going to do it and
we're mobilize all our
forces. Tampering with the elections?
Colluding?
Because they didn't want Putin in his pipeline. Is what they didn't want.
I've used this analogy
Amazing,
before.
Amazing, man.
You're in a relationship with a significant other.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And her frenemy. You know, that's what Russia is there, our frenemy.
Our frenemy, yeah.
Or his frenemy, hacks into your phone and shows, hacks into your partner's phone and shows you the contents of her or his phone that indicates malfeasance across the relationship. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm mad at my significant other. I'm not mad at her frenemy for showing me the contents of her email or her phone. I'm mad at her. And I don't think the government, and in this case especially the Democrats in the Hillary camp, they don't get it. We're not mad at Russia. We're mad at Hillary. The Catholics are mad at Hillary for what she said about them. And everyone that she threw under the
Foundation
bus.
Stuff,
yes, we're mad. That's what we're mad about. All the stuff that was revealed. Do I care whether or not there was collusion going on that revealed this stuff? No. It's the existence of the stuff itself, the contents of Podesta's email. That's all that they gave us. So if giving us, oh, if you would have just let us hide all that from the American public, and they would have never known any of this,
we would have won.
Yeah, so it's your fault, Russia, that we lost. And it's not our fault that we engaged in all this bad behavior and just didn't hide it well. No, it's your fault for helping to reveal it.
I don't think she would have won for this very reason. They didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
No, the media never talked about that stuff. Nobody knew about it.
You know, I talked about the Rosneft, I think, was the company that bought the uranium concessions in the United States.
Right.
The Russians
bought the American
uranium when Hillary was Secretary of State, and she signed off on that. So did she collude with the Russians to give them our uranium reserves? Gee, she had to talk to them. So anyway, I'm not at all bothered by Russia's meddling or interfering in the U.S. elections. If by interfering you mean they educated the electorate as to who their candidate really was, then I'm not mad at the Russians. I'm mad at the candidate for having all that crap their email.
And don't you think it's curious that when the emails came out, was the same weekend that mysterious tape of 10 years ago that Donald Trump, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Came out.
With Billy Bush.
And I saw some stats, and the amount of times that tape was run as opposed to the amount of times that the Hillary Clinton emails were talked.
Right.
It's like 100 to 1.
To one, right.
It was like, what?
And now I see Bush's...
Did anybody even talk about those things?
Bush's ethics lawyer is talking about the emoluments clause in the Constitution.
What is that?
Well, it means that if President Obama sold a book in Russia, then he's getting money from a foreign government. He's violating. No, what it means is if Donald Trump rents a hotel room to someone from Russia, then he's getting an emolument from a foreign government.
Oh, emolument.
Are we being absurd now?
Well, pretty much.
We've reached the height of absurdity. The man is in, 100 different businesses to suggest that some of his revenue sources might come from foreign governments. Well, yeah, I bet they do. But if we're going to be that nitpicky, I believe, as the Dire Straits band put it in a song, an emolument is money for nothing. You get your money for nothing. So when a foreign government starts handing out money to U.S. politicians for nothing, then you have to worry. When a man who's been in this business for as long as he's been in the hotel and hospitality business continues to do the same business and happens to do some with foreign governments because he has the best hotel in Washington, D.C., I don't see how that runs afoul of the emoluments clause in the Constitution. So just another example of them. They're keeping Mr. Trump distracted, so he can't get his tax return or his tax reform proposals through Congress. No hint of a 50-year bond, no corporate tax cut, nothing. And, even with all this, he's managed to stimulate job growth. If we would just untie his hands and let him do his job, I think the United States would be on that path to recovery that he talked about.
So that's coming. 50-year bonds, 40-year bonds, right?
Sure.
Coming.
Why not?
Why not?
I mean, this is the time to refinance your debt. And we have over 60% of the nation's debt financed for 5 years or less.
That's not good.
How does that make any good economic sense in this, the lowest interest rate environment in 5 decades?
Mm-hmm. So they're going to roll those over and go. And people will buy them?
Well, sure. They're buying the 2 years, the 3 month, the 6 month,
so
the 1 year.
So you can buy a 50-year?
10-year even. Will people buy 50-year bonds? You bet they will.
But not at 2%, would they?
No, maybe at 4%. Maybe at 4.5%. Who knows? They'd probably jump on them at 4.5%.
Boy, if I had money, I'd do 4.5%.
A lot of people would.
And
there are a lot
of people who would you?
No, I would not buy that.
Of course not. No, you couldn't, knowing what we know about inflation.
Knowing what I know about money.
I take that back. I wouldn't. Yeah. But I guess people would do it to be safe, right? If they had.
Yes.
And the
funds, pension funds who have new workers coming online, and they need that guaranteed rate of return for a set period. That helps actuarially. It helps them do their job. Yeah, because they can't put a fixed rate of return on a stock or some other investment in real estate or anything. But with a fixed rate of return on a 40-year bond, then they can match the retirement needs of their members to the maturity date of the security. It just makes all the sense in the world. And from our perspective, from the nation's perspective, it really imperative. It is imperative that we reduce that debt service figure. 77 cents of every tax dollar just to service the debt is insane. So let's lengthen the maturities and, you know, take more than half of that 60%. If 30% of the nation's debt was due payable in 5 years, I might not feel so alarmed. But with 60%, I mean, that's $6 trillion in the next 5 years at minimum, and probably the number is closer to nine. So not good.
Well, you know, Helicopter Ben, he was the guy that was really working the quantitative easing, money printing, zero interest rates, near interest rates,
sub-zero,
new. And so all of these pension funds were going out there chasing yield, right?
Right.
They were out there chasing yield. And tell folks what that means.
Well, they need a higher rate of return.
To make the actuaries work.
That's right. So they bought riskier investments, such as mortgage-backed securities.
Have you seen some of the default rates in these pension funds?
This is not good. Pension fund defaults long before it was fashionable. That's been on my radar screen for 4 years or more.
Yeah.
And now it's really coming to a head.
Wow.
So you have a pension and there's a way for you to take your money out now, even if it's just a fraction.
Really? Just get it?
Get it. Man, and you know, the cops in Dallas did just that. Seeing the handwriting on the walls that, you know, they're going to bust out this pension fund. They're going to cut our benefits. You better just take what you can right now. And then the city finally just said, well, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Now you don't have an option. Now you just have to take your chances with everybody else.
Andrew, can you conjecture the percentage, say, of these 80 million people that are counting on these things, how significant that is to their monthly income? The pension
on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, on a 1 to 10.
10.
No.
You know, yeah.
No.
So,
don't
yeah.
tell me that.
So, all right. So there are already, we talked about it maybe 3 months ago.
Yeah.
The Teamsters Pension Fund in New York cut their benefits in half, man.
I know. I saw that.
And they didn't say, oh, by the way, we're cutting your benefits in half. It's just the check shows up and it's for half of what it was the month before. And that's how these members found out that their pension payments were cut in half. So, and there are dozens of entities that have asked for permission to do the same thing. They've gotten prior bailouts or they've gotten special dispensation that prevents them from doing just that. Well, now they're asking for permission to do just that, cut benefits to public workers and to defined benefit pension plans across the system.
Huh.
As that reverberates through the economy, I don't even want to think about the financial implications because it's all default, and then more default.
What are the effects to the ordinary person? Oh, I think we kind of talked about it. Barbara writes in, I was reading her mind here, who's not invested in bonds or stocks when what Andrew was talking about may happen later this year or next year. Yes, I've talked to Andrew years ago, but there are other safe things to do as I was going to buy some property. Or is the money in the bank safe? Love your show from Barb. Yeah.
Money in the bank is definitely not safe.
Money
you know,
in the bank.
No. And I've done this several times. I'll do it once more. If you said that's like money in the bank to a 19th century person, what you were saying to that person is this is a risky thing. If you say that's like money in the bank to a 21st century person, it's like, oh, there's no risk at all. And so that's the difference. I believe having money in the bank is the riskiest thing you can do. The bulk of your wealth in a financial institution. Everything from freezing your account, preventing your access, devaluing your account, a one-off capital tax. I mean, there's a whole list of risk that people don't even figure in. So real estate, you're going to take your money out of the bank, buy real estate. Well, that's okay if you don't mind not being liquid. Now, you have an asset. But you, in sometimes, cannot sell that asset, as we witnessed in the 2008 debacle.
But right, let's see, real estate is rising everywhere, right? It's bubbling. I mean, do you dare, even buy any right now on the upside?
Always buy your own home, the house you live in. You should own that,
sure.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Even when it's better for a renter. Especially if you're a wage earner and you're still earning income, absolutely you want to own your own home. And then does it make sense to buy the house next door? Well, maybe if your choice is keep your money in the bank or buy the house next door, you'd be better off to buy the house next door. You'll be able to rent it and generate a rate of return on your capital.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can't knock real estate. However, I can knock it as a bulk of a person's assets. You know, if real estate is the represents the bulk of your assets, over the long term, you might not be as liquid as you would like to be. So why not mortgage the hell out of it? It's not going to go up any faster or slower if you owe money on it. And at least if there's a protracted downturn, you still have access to capital. You'll find that the time when you need the money the most is the time when the banks don't want to lend it to you in terms of real estate. And so having a cash cushion that enables you to support your property in hard times, well, that's of critical import if you're going to be a real estate investor. But again, my coin element, I'm just 20% of most people's portfolio. And if you take that 20% and buy wisely, buy good coins, put them away, no matter how long you leave them there, when you go back to them, they still have value. Your ability to convert that value into current money is almost instantaneous. Obviously, the longer you wait, the better return you might get, but you can turn your coins into money in a heartbeat, something you can't do with real estate or other types of investments.
Mark is in Bastrop, Texas, maybe 75 miles from here. You and Patrick have been tracking the rise of MZM on your shows with a caution to listeners that massive inflation is inevitable, but I'm a little skeptical. Could their large rise in MZM be attributed to baby boomers retiring and that money will remain parked as cash reserves indefinitely? And similarly, as boomers retire, wouldn't that also lower the unemployment rate? I think the greatest generation might actually be stabilizing our economy by exiting the workforce so others that need jobs can take their places while simultaneously saving their money for old age, which will keep velocity in check and avoid inflation.
Yeah, if you could convince that pensioner that now that they've stopped working and have to start spending their principal or income on their investments to live, see, there's the fly in your ointment.
What are you saying?
If you're assuming that the behavior of the 80 million pensioners who have this created this large increase in MZM
by putting
money aside, and now they're going to leave the workforce and rely on that money to support themselves moving forward, then that kind of eliminates the idea that they're going to just leave the money there. They're retired now. Their plan calls for saving the money for the last 30 years and then now spending it over the next 30 years. That's the typical investment plan. So that kind of throws a wrench into the whole 80 million people are going to leave their money parked in these immediate obligations. So the reason it's there is they want safety. They want the ability to spend it. So I don't buy that part of the argument. As for them leaving the workforce, yeah, that attrition is already built into the system. And without those folks leaving the workforce, you wouldn't have any room for new folks entering the workforce. But even in the face of that, that JOLTS number last month was a mind blower. There are way more jobs open than there are people to take them, qualified folks to take them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not, it's not the folks that are retiring that are the problem. It's the skills for the new jobs are just not there in the existing workforce. So I don't buy the premise, and no, I think that may have been the case for the last 30 years, that as they've piled the money in MZM and it hasn't been competing for goods and services, then having a big pile of cash sitting there certainly hasn't hurt us as an economy. But now, with 80 million people retired, drawing upon that money, I believe it will fuel the inflation that you hope it controls.
What's his face? Kyle, how do you say his name? Robert Kiyosaki.
Kiyosaki.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Listen to him.
Yeah.
I use debt. So while the other guys are saying get out of debt, live debt free, I'm borrowing my butt off.
Who's that sound like? What's that sound like?
I thought I died and went to heaven. You know, I just kept borrowing more money and buying more.
But not a crashing gold price, Robert.
No, I buy crashing gold prices all the time.
So let's talk gold now.
Well, the third thing is taxes. You see, so it's crashes, debt, and taxes are why the rich are getting richer. Like Trump and I, you don't think we borrow money and we don't pay tax. You know how far ahead that gets us?
Yeah, man.
Well, it's definitely has gotten very far ahead, Robert. Yeah. So let's look at gold now. Last time you were on, it's been about 2 years, and you were telling me how gold for you is real money.
Yes.
I'm guessing your view hasn't changed much.
No, I started buying gold in 1972, right after I understood what Nixon did in 71 by taking us off the gold standard. And I've been a student of gold, which is why I love Kitco so much. See, gold is not only real money, it's spiritual money.
Oh.
I remember I was way out in Fiji one time talking to this guru out there, and I said, this guy was dripping with gold. I said, why do you have gold on? And he goes, looks at me like I was some kind of idiot, you know, and he's a very spiritual man. He says, gold are the tears of God. Gold attracts wealth. So he says, if you want, let's say, $1,000 a month income, you hold $1,000 of real gold somewhere near your person, in your house. That's why he was hanging all around him. So it said real gold attracts, and it has so for thousands of years.
Yet it's not really attracting millennials yet, who seem more drawn to the cryptocurrencies right now. And I want to get your thoughts on that. So how do we get the younger generations interested in gold here?
Well, maybe someday they'll wake up is when they find out what real gold, what real money is. Like my friend James Rickards, you know, his great book is called The Road to Ruin. He talks about how the real long-term wealth people versus new money. New money is into derivatives, which is cryptocurrency and all that, stocks, bonds, mutual funds. Old money has always been in gold, land, and artwork.
Sounds like he listened to this show. That's funny, huh?
Hey, Robert and I go back quite a few years.
That's funny. You know, the spiritual stuff is pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, you can get some colloidal gold from Gary Hanna, which is monatomic, and put that in your nebulizer and breathe that every day, and you'll probably get rich. I don't know. I'm just making that up, but it could be. Somebody,
gold will be around you then, wouldn't it?
Somebody sent me this picture. I'm going to send it to you. There's a story out there of this cat. And so this cat won't leave the gold coins alone.
Yes.
He won't leave it. He goes to the bathroom and he comes back and sleeps on the coins.
Yeah,
this is crazy.
I've gotten a picture from another client.
Did you? The same picture?
Well, a similar picture where she was opening her box on the kitchen table and the cat jumped up and just started interfering.
Right.
You know, wanted to get at the gold. And then once the gold was out, wouldn't leave the, you know, if it was, she left it on the table, the cat was on the table. And she told me the story and then took a picture of it and sent it to me. And then I got that picture this morning again of another cat. That was the second picture that someone has sent me of a cat fawning over a pile of money.
Well, you know how sensitive they are, and they must feel the vibes from it or something, you know. But Kiyosaki's point is very interesting. There's been other people that have said that so maybe also that you've talked about gold being impermanent, you know, it could sit in the ocean for 200 years and it's still good, and it's hard, and what are some of the other things? I mean, it's
divisible.
Divisible, and you chop it up. But maybe there's something going on with gold. I know that there's Ormus gold, which is monatomic gold, which is what Gary Hanna does. You can look on our website if you want to buy some. And there's something to gold and the spirituality of it for forever. I mean, since the beginning of time. And there, of course, is talk that some aliens, you hear this one, came down to make us like the slaves, so we can dig up the gold because they need it to go back to their planet and use it for something. It's The Gods of the New Millennium is the name of that book. Mm. Yeah, pretty interesting thing. So I just sent you that story on the cat, so I think you'll like this one.
And you know, my partner Fred in South Carolina is an amateur astronomer.
Yeah.
I call him an astrologer every now and then just to get
his
goat up.
He's an astronomer. Astronomer. Yeah.
And he says, he wrote a great article years ago entitled Gold is Extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
And he says all the gold on the planet came from outer space. It didn't start here. It ended here.
Really?
Yes. Gold is extraterrestrial. I'm pretty sure we posted that article on the
Maybe he's on to something.
Yeah, I think he is. And as others have told me that that waves, frequencies, every element has frequencies.
Of course.
Right? And gold has the perfect frequency that lines up with the human frequency. So I there may be something to it. I don't know enough about it. I just know that for 5,000 years, gold has been money, and I expect going 5,000 years forward, it will continue to be money. What I try to do is pick the rarest of the gold elements, and in that, in this case, it's a fixed supply, known quantity, increasing demand, gold and silver, coin. A coin minted that you know how many were made, as opposed to just an ounce of gold that you dig out of the ground, and they continue to dig out of the ground on any given day.
Yeah, we had a gentleman on the show a few years back that suggested that a very healthy thing to do if you owned a bunch of gold is, I don't know how
sleep
safe it would
it.
Be. Yeah, you sleep on it. You put it under your bed.
Put it under your mattress.
That's not very safe, though. Well, I don't know.
I don't know how safe it is.
Who's going to come in your house? You know?
Somebody. Maybe you could make it into a bed frame.
That's right. There you could do. Nobody would ever find it. Could you ask Andy to discuss what legal tax-deferred structures are available to savers and investors apart from gold and silver, a legal tender? For example, I've heard that there are self-directed IRAs that allow for tax deferral until a person reaches the age of 65. Maybe Andy could cover some of these possibilities if he knows about them.
So the ultimate tax-free type of investing money is the type Robert Kiyosaki spoke about, borrowed money, for goodness sake. If you are working every day and paying taxes on your earnings, and saving your money, the better formula is to borrow the equity from your home. That offsets the interest payments, offsets the income in terms of taxes. Plus, there's no tax on the borrowed money. And so there's the ultimate, as he put it, how far ahead that puts me. So where an average person has to earn a dollar just to get 60 cents to invest, borrowed money, you invest 100 cents on the dollar. So, you know, I've had many people say to me, well, Andy, I want to put $1,000 a month into rare coins. And I say, great, borrow $100,000, put it into coins right now, and pay it off at $1,000 a month. You're much better off. The coins will appreciate the whole time you're paying it off, and you'll get the tax deferred benefits. So you mentioned a couple, IRA, the traditional IRA, you put the money in and you don't pay tax when you put it in. As you take the money out, you pay tax. So that's not really a tax avoidance. That's just tax deferral. That's tax deferred. The Roth IRA, however, you pay tax on the money when you put it in, but then no matter what it grows to, when you pull it out, it's tax-free. That's today. They could change that law tomorrow. And entities such as trusts will also allow you to store wealth without paying tax. But generally, a passive income generator is one that does not throw off dividends or annual income. And Kiyosaki also mentioned art.
Yeah, he mentioned art.
And antiques and old automobiles. So these are passive income generators in that you buy them and then they appreciate in value, but you don't pay tax on that appreciated value until you actually sell them. So there's your tax
kind
deferred.
Kind of like coins, right?
Yeah, well, believe me, coins are the number one passive income generator in that they meet all the good tests of an item. You know, I like art, but it's sometimes illiquid. You can't find a buyer. It's hard to quantify the value, et cetera. But with coins, man, there's like a, you know, daily price guide published by independent sources. There's authentication. A very wholesome secondary market with lots of deep money ready to buy these limited supply items. So the perfect passive income generator. If there's a better one, I'm just not aware of it. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I'm just not aware of it.
Uh-huh. Oftentimes we said on the show, Andrew, that money, geopolitics, inextricably tied together.
Oh, yes.
So here's a good example. This is pretty interesting. Out of yesterday, my sources say that this Syria thing is about a gas pipeline competing Mr. Putin and the EU, the neocon boys, that they want theirs, right? They both go through Syria, and one ends up in Qatar, and one goes from Russia to Qatar. Well, it turns out that the Qatar one is the Russian one, And don't you find it curious that after a visit from President Trump, United Arab Emirates, from yesterday, withdraw all their money from the Qatar banks. Massive banking crisis to follow immediately. Mm-hmm. Whoops. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess Mr.
Could
Trump,
it start right there?
Yeah, it could start
could
Mr.
right
Trump
there.
Been in on that deal?
Yeah, sure.
Said, hey, guys, what do you think? You want to just, you know, we want this pipeline, and we need this pipeline. And
More importantly, we don't want them to have
we don't want them to have their pipeline, right?
That's the most important.
Yeah. Let's see.
You know, Saudis deal with, 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
The House of Saud has had a problem with Qatar in terms of gas. I mean, that is the money behind the deal. I get it that it's not physical money, but the potential for Qatar. I mean, they've funded terrorism, no question about it, but so has Saudi Arabia.
And so is everybody else.
So is everybody else in that region.
On the planet, yeah. So is the United States.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You
know. Yeah.
Those in the glass houses, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Finally, this is a good way to end this morning. We had a great show. Don writes in, Patrick and Andrew, I've been listening to every show since the KLBJ days.
Ooh.
As I recall, you did a Wednesday show online and a Saturday show on KLBJ.
Right.
Thank you for the valuable education on how the world works. Follow the money and the truth will usually reveal itself. I had a really nice weird thought. Maybe it was a dream last night. I'm not sure. That the global banking system was removed and there was a global debt jubilee. Want me to keep dreaming? What would it take for this dream to come true? All the best to both of you. Well, thanks for your kind thoughts. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. It would require the elimination of money as we know it.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Because remember, money is debt.
Money is debt.
Yeah.
Okay. So all the money out there, which is trillions and trillions and trillions.
And trillions upon trillions.
And trillions upon
trillions. Is all based on a corresponding debt instrument.
Okay. So right? What if you
canceled all the debt?
Yeah, canceled all the debt.
You just canceled all the money.
Okay. So then what would you have left?
Worthless money.
That's not good.
Obviously.
Why would the money be worthless just because you canceled all the debt?
Because the backing of it is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, what makes the money valuable is that people need it in order to pay their debt. They need the money to pay their debts.
No.
So now if they don't have to pay their debts, well, goodness, there goes, it's in the case of the United States, right? 77 cents.
Yeah, the dollar would go boom.
Yeah, they'd be everywhere and worthless.
Who would want them?
Who would want them?
But you've argued, too, that the pull on the dollar is what makes it valuable.
That's correct.
It's kind of like, it's
the demand.
The pull on Apple is that they've got people convinced that these are the coolest things on the planet.
Yep.
And when they have a new one come out, people want them. And, you know, they did a good job. You know, God bless Steve Jobs. He's a smart guy. But the pull is a couple of things you've taught us. One is the oil, right? Every time you pump a barrel of oil out of the ground, I don't care where you are, generally, you got to have a dollar to buy it. But now that's starting to change a bit, right? That's the pull. That's the whole Bretton Woods thing. And,
correct.
Right.
And give that dollar demand so that the whole world needs it.
Needs dollars. And that pulls on your brand, right?
Correct.
On your brand. The second one is pretty curious that you've taught us is that when you go in and borrow $300,000 for a new home, while the bank and the Fed will create the $300,000 on your signature, which
they won't create the interest.
They don't create the interest.
That's right.
Which is, I don't know, what's interest on a 30-year note on $300,000? $200,000?
Yeah, over the life of the loan.
Yeah, $200,000?
Double, yeah.
Is it double?
Maybe.
All right, so they don't create the $300,000.
No.
No.
They do not.
So that means there's constantly a deficit of dollars, so that creates a pull to buy the new iPhone. Or
correct.
The pull to buy the new dollar.
Whatever.
Pretty clever.
The pull to buy the new everything.
Which is, I guess, Andrew, was why the whole Mideast Sharia thing and gold and interest, maybe that's where that comes from.
Yeah, the prohibition on usury, absolutely.
Is that where that comes from, this whole idea?
Yes, it does, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Hmm. The prohibition on, I was talking about the interest.
Yeah, that's usury, interest.
I see.
When you charge someone a fee for using your money.
So in the Mideast, they think you should just let the people use it and pay it back?
Neither a lender nor a borrower be.
Uh-huh.
So, but if you're engaged in a scheme whereby you might invest the money and make some money, then that's okay. So it's what they call Sharia compliant, where it's not interest, it's gain, capital gain. So that's okay in Sharia law, but straight interest, not so good.
So no wonder the Mideast people don't have a good day when the bankers come in and take over the central bank, Iraq, Libya, Egypt. I don't know. Just don't get me started.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
No wonder they don't like it.
That's why they don't like it.
That's one of the reasons they don't like it. Probably a lot of other reasons, too.
So anyway, this Trump narrative there, this the Qatar cutter.
Yeah, cutter.
Is the way you're supposed to say. But this official narrative that they're funding sponsors.
Terrorists.
The president has taken a hold of that and, you know, he's tweeted it to the world.
Sure.
That, good to see that the king is taking a hard line on extremism. And,
right?
Well, so it makes me wonder, that Mr. Trump has had a good talking to, and it looks to me like he's starting to play by the playbook, that's for sure.
Well, can we though argue that the boys, who don't like him anyway, the globalists, they're going to let him get away with a lot of stuff.
As long as he'll play.
As long as he plays a little bit.
And
if he really starts getting serious about not going to war, I think the boys could have a problem with him.
They'll have a big problem.
A big problem with him, right? Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or if he starts talking about...
Or if he starts really trying to affect the globalist agenda, you know, that...
which would be what, to really...
Well, to take a pro-Russia direction.
Yeah.
That would certainly upset the
apple cart. I got a feeling that once he and Putin start breaking bread, that they're going to be fast friends. I just got this feeling.
I think they're afraid of that, too.
Yeah, I think they
keep them away.
Well, somebody should probably advise Mr. Trump not to start thinking about printing their own money in the Treasury and taking over the Fed. I don't think it's
going to. That'll be the end of it right there.
That's not going to go well, right?
Yeah, no.
You talk about Kevlar suits.
Anybody who suggests that is definitely missing the boat.
OMG. So you don't think that Mr. Jared or Ivanka are going to be
Not a chance.
Dad, why don't you just print your own money? Because, you know, we borrow from the Fed and they print it.
Cutter. Could be the tipping point in all
of this.
Could
be the start, yeah.
You know, we talked about Cutter. We talked about economic power. Mm-hmm. Take a guess at what the average per capita income in Cutter is. The average person, what do you think they make?
$78,000.
$130,000.
Whoops, I wasn't even close.
That's the average.
130 grand
per capita.
Woo. Do they have their own currency or do they use dollars?
Sure, they have
their own Cutter thing.
Yeah, they got their own currency.
Cutter thing. What's that worth per? Well, in relation to the dollar.
And it's apparently backed by this enormous pile of natural gas that they have.
Right. So. But when you back a currency by stuff in the ground, if it's not exchangeable, it doesn't matter, does it?
No, because it's backed by stuff in the ground.
Yeah, so what does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
I mean, we could say that a lot. Like, people are saying that Iraq wants to raise their value because they got all this gold and oil and stuff like that in the ground. Well, fine, but if it weren't, unless it's exchangeable, it doesn't matter?
No. It doesn't.
It doesn't matter.
But, you know, in the case of the Rial, as long as they have access to the gas, effectively the gas backs the Rial. So if they issue their currency in proportion to the amount of natural gas that they pump, that currency will stay stable for the rest of time.
Oh, is that right? Okay, so that's why Iran and Iraq and all that, with all their oil, they feel like they've got some kind of sovereignty, even though they don't.
Right.
I mean, you know, because let's
tell the truth
there.
Because their wealth is based on something real.
Let's not talk about the three massive embassies in Iraq. Worth $6 billion. You don't want to talk about that.
No. And Iraq paid for it, you know, like the wall.
That's right. Okay. Did you see Mr. Trump's thinking about a solar wall? Did you see that?
Yeah, why not? Pay for itself, right?
Yeah, then he said, well...
That we didn't solicit that proposal. That was just somebody came up with that idea and presented it to us.
Yeah, that's right. So. But he's trying to sell the Republicans on it.
And sure.
And what he said was, I don't know if you saw the design, but it looks pretty cool. You can't climb up it. But he said, well, then we could sell, check this out, then we could sell the electricity to Mexico, and guess what? They'll pay for the
wall.
They'll
pay for the wall.
I thought that was clever.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Well, Mr. Trump's having fun, and God love him. Okay.
But I would watch that Qatar thing, Patrick.
Okay.
Seriously,
we'll
keep an eye on. Yeah, they keep putting pressure on the currency. You know, banks all around the world are stopping their exchange of currency.
Yeah.
They're kind of shutting those people down at every turn.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to have to trade their natural gas for dollars and then use the dollars to back their currency. It's at, I think, a 20-year low today.
Yeah, really?
So don't know where it's going to end, but it can't end pretty, that's for sure.
So I wonder why President Obama let Iran off the hook with these sanctions. There was something going on there we didn't catch, or did we catch it?
I think it was pretty simple.
Oh, because they want to let them in the SWIFT system. The bankers
want them back in.
Yeah, bankers are back in. Gold's up $10 this morning, and silver's up, 38 cents.
Holy cow.
Holy cow. Holy camoly. Man, oil.
Good time to buy silver. Man,
I tell you, silver,
geez. We have a good stock of it. If you're considering a silver purchase, I've been loading up, and now would be a good time.
Like you can buy halves and quarters and dimes?
Yeah, quarters, halves, and dimes.
Really? Really?
For just a small premium over their actual silver content, which is at a pretty decent low.
$17, right?
I remember when we were talking about premiums of $4 an ounce.
Yeah, I know.
For silver coins.
Not
anymore, no. The premium has just about evaporated, so that means you get a great deal closer to silver than you ever have before. And I would urge you, if you've been considering it for a moment, now is the time to buy when premiums are at their lowest point.
Well, you know, these silver bugs like JB have been out for years saying, one of these days, it's going to go. And they're probably right.
Yeah.
They're probably right.
Although JB's interest in cryptocurrency really has me a little concerned.
Well, JB.
If he abandons the silver market in favor of the crypto.
No, I don't think he is.
I hope not, because he's a great source if you want to buy paper, options, contracts, futures, and things like that.
Fort Wealth Trading. JB's a good dude. Okay, Andrew, what's your number up there? We're out of here.
800-468-2646.
800-468-2646. Thanks a lot. Good show.
Thank you.
We'll have a lot of fun. We got tomorrow Harvey Beagleston and somebody else.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.